Hello, and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McRoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
Well, we're here at the final week of the Max Fun Drive this year.
Yes.
It's been a long road.
A month-long one.
A month-long, gentle, and so we've come to the end. No?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can. I don't know if it's a good idea.
Do you really
idea.
Want... That's really what you want to do?
Something unpredictable.
Oh.
The end is right.
There you go. I knew you would.
I hope you had the drive of your life.
Very good. That was good. That was good. That's is that good. Better?
That was better.
What other graduation songs do you want me to sing?
As we go.
All right, we're done. That's the end of it. It is the end of the Max Fun Drive. Thank you to all of you who have become members, who are already members, who have shared our show so that others could find out about it and maybe become members. Everybody who's participated, everybody mm-hmm. who's listened. It's really about the friends you make along the way.
It's about the journey, not the destination.
We're going to tell you more this episode about the gifts that you can get if you decide to join the Maximum Fun Network and become a monthly donating member later. But I just wanted to mention that you can visit MaximumFun.org/join at any time while you're listening, even.
Yeah.
If you still want to do so, there are all kinds of levels that you can join at. At $5 a month, you get a lot of bonus content. $10 a month, you get a cool pin. There are all kinds of other levels, and you can check those out, and we'll tell you more about them. But just as a little sneak peek, MaximumFun.org/join is the website. So just wanted to mention that. It's my last
Put that
it's
out
my
there.
Last time to get to do that little...
intro bit?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Until next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do it again.
So are you both doing okay?
Yeah.
You know,
Taylor made friend with a bathroom spider, so I don't know.
Oh, I don't want to talk about my bathroom spider.
You don't want to talk about your bathroom spider?
Well, my bathroom spider's dead now.
Oh. Taylor did not bring about the end of their bathroom spider.
No. My bathroom spider is not a new friend. My bathroom spider was my friend for the past year. And then when it got very hot in my apartment, my cat started sleeping by the toilet. I guess that's what they do. And my cat discovered my bathroom spider because I realized, like, this is everybody's fear, right? That the spider's going to come to you on your toilet. My bathroom spider lived right behind the toilet. But I would just say, hey, and it would say, hey, and then you could pee. But my cat did not get along quite so well, so he came chasing it out of the bathroom one day, and I could not get to my spider before my cat could. So,
wait, I've been in your bathroom in the past year. Does that mean when I peed in your apartment that there was a spider back there?
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm glad I didn't know that at the time. I would have been very mm-hmm. scared to pee.
Yeah, I wasn't in the habit of telling people, and you know, she kept to herself. She knew where she liked to be.
I think that Jack eating the bathroom spider is, that's nature though, right?
I guess so, but I still was very mad at him. He was very confused because, you know, usually it's like, I guess like flies and roaches. I'm fine if he wants to eat those, but spiders are different. Spiders hit different.
Circle of life.
I don't know if this is comforting, but if it is, Taylor, I am certain that you will get more spiders in your apartment.
Thanks. I hope so.
Over time.
I appreciate that.
Is that a nice thing to say to a person?
I hope. I just like one or two. Just some friendly buddies.
Okay. You know? Well, I have no doubt. In my experience, the spiders find you.
I hate it. They do. And I do not enjoy spiders' presence. Aww. I will never bring about the end of a spider, but I'm not going to, like, chill with
these
them.
These are more mottos of 2020. 2020, please scream inside your heart. The spiders find you.
The spiders find you.
Spiders will find you. Have you ever seen a spider up close, though, with their big old eyes and their goofy?
Yeah, they have so many of them.
Yeah, they're big. They're just big, round, shiny eyes and their little peetsies. They've got little furry feet.
I've learned to live with all the ones that are in my garden. Like, I dodge them as they kind of jump around while I'm out there watering and weeding and whatnot. I just dodge them. I don't attack them.
They think they're just playing a game with you, like, oh, yeah, dodge spider. I love this game.
I'm just trying to get that cucumber there, buddy. Just watch out.
Right. Riley, they're just trying to, like, oh, you want... You going to sleep? You want to cuddle, buddy? You want to maybe cuddle a little bit? I'm good at cuddles.
Well, no. Because then what if they eat me? Or I eat them. Because I heard you eat a lot of spiders in your life.
No, you don't really eat a lot of spiders.
I don't know if that's true. Spiders are pretty smart.
They get in my ear.
There can be bugs on your fresh produce if you don't wash it.
Well, I always wash my fresh produce.
Well, that's good. I mean, I do too.
Your PSA?
This is important to wash your fresh produce.
Is that how you end up eating spiders? Is that how they just hang out on
you? I mean, you could definitely.
I've definitely seen those, like, videos or articles on the internet about, like, giant poisonous spiders sneaking in on, like, bananas from other countries.
Oh, no, I wouldn't worry as much. But, like, there are little, like,
Have I eaten a spider?
Have you eaten probably a banana? Maybe.
You've probably eaten a bug of some sort. Like, if you ate some fresh produce that wasn't washed or something, yeah, you probably ate a bug at some. I mean, it's no big deal.
I don't want to think about that. What if it never came out? What if he's still in there?
A lot of our bodies are bacteria anyway, so.
And
that
spiders.
That doesn't make me feel better.
By the time you're in your, I don't know, late 20s, you are 50% bacteria, 50% spiders internally. That's just math. That's...
Doctor, can I get a medical check on that?
With medical opinions like that, you could advise the president.
Oh, no, that's fair.
Oh, no.
So, on to lighter things.
Yeah. Please, no more spider stomachs, please.
I am glad that we're rounding out our Max Fun Drive episodes with the Babysitter's Club, because
yes,
I feel like it is good and lovely and wholesome and pure, and I just enjoy it, especially in its current incarnation as a TV show.
I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Like, I knew it would be, like, lighthearted and fun, but it is focused on girls who are in, like, middle school, so I don't know why I was just expecting to not really be able to enjoy the content as much.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. It was good. I enjoy it.
I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I watched it purely on a whim with Charlie. I turned on the first episode thinking, like, I don't know if this is probably, like, going to seem really silly to me now as a grown-up. And I didn't know if it was too old for Charlie. But it was fine for her. I mean, she enjoyed it, watched it, was engaged, followed the plot lines. Like, it was good, even for a 5-year-old. Almost 6. Jeez, she's almost 6.
That's wild.
I know. But I also super enjoyed it. Cried multiple times.
Yeah, I also did cry. I've only watched half of the first season, but I did cry once in those 5 episodes.
Taylor,
are you waiting to know if I cried?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you like to share whether or not you cried?
I'm always crying all the time. So yes.
2020. I'm always crying all the time.
Yes. my heart is screaming. My insides are crying. And spiders.
And spiders are finding you.
Spiders will find you. The Babysitter's Club was a book series. Everybody probably knows that. Even if you didn't read them, I feel like everybody was aware they existed at some point. By Ann M. Martin. They came out in 1986, the first ones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And were published until 2000. They're still out there. You can still buy them. They're still... The covers are different now.
You know, if they were only published until 2000, then any of them I read had to have been Ural's. That I just had still. I don't know why I thought they were still, like, a hip happening book series in, like, 2008.
Well, now there...
I owned many.
There was a graphic novel series that came out. I know, because I knew one of the people working on it back at college. So that came out, like, early 2000s or mid-2000s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's in 2006 that started. And then there's supposed to be 6 more starting next year.
Oh, nice.
Do you think those 6 more will be about these versions of the Babysitter's Club? These hip modern ones?
I don't know. I would assume. I would assume I hope that so. They're trying to bring all the characters in the whole series into the now. Because it, you know, I mean, I don't, I didn't go back and reread the books. I wanted to focus on the TV show. Mm-hmm. But my recollection is that they were very much like set in that time period.
Yeah.
And the they didn't deal with any like major big world issues ever. It was very insular. Mm-hmm. It was very much the characters dealing with their own personal individual problems.
Yeah.
That were not necessarily applicable to anyone but themselves. But most kids reading them could probably find something they related to. You know, there were parts that the, there were struggles that were very like universal preteen type right. struggles. But they weren't dealing with bigger things for the most part.
I do appreciate right off the bat starting the show. I remember one teen TV show I started watching when I was probably in middle school was Pretty Little Liars. And they were girls that were supposed to be like freshman year of high school. So only like 2 years older than the girls in this series. And I just thought that was how I was going to look in high school. But they all really were like 25 years old. These are actual young teens.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, knowing that like Charlie will be watching girls that are their own age playing characters that are their own age, because then you don't have unrealistic expectations about what you're supposed to look like when you're, you know, in middle school.
Yeah, I agree, because that's what I, my memories of Babysitter Club were, I don't think I ever read the books, but I watched the TV show that was on for a while when we were kids. And that's like, I guess they were supposed to be middle school students, but they were all, I just thought in my head, like, oh, they're teenagers, right? Like, that's who the, so seeing them so much younger, but that makes sense with the ages they're supposed to be. I always always appreciate that in casting.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's a great thing. Obviously, one of the big, so if you're not familiar with the Babysitter's Club, it's a book series about
a club of babysitters.
Yes. A group of largely preteen and then on to teenage girls who, and then eventually some boys, but girls who babysit. And they formed a, well, I mean, it's a club, but it's a business.
Yeah.
You know, it's a babysitting business.
It's actually a pretty good business structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you have days that are open on your schedule that you babysit, and someone calls and you say, okay, this is who will babysit your kid. And it's great.
Yeah. And I was always fascinated, like, and so they go on with like how the business develops and their babysitting foibles and like the individual growing up type storylines.
Yeah.
The episodes of the TV show are named after book titles.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of cool. Like, the first one is Christy's Great Idea. That's Christy cool. is a founding member of the Babysitter's Club, and her great idea is, spoilers, the Babysitter's Club. But what they've done with the TV show that I think is really good is they took these basic sort of universal themes of like growing up, change, loss, like trying to fit in, trying to find your place, find your voice, all these things that are really important. And then they really, I think, did a good job of interpreting it in the actual world we live in today, as opposed to what a lot of things in like the 80s and 90s did, which is this whitewashed version that only represents a fraction of the people.
Right.
I think they've done a really nice job of diversifying the characters and the storylines. You know, they're the same. It's funny because they're the same narrative structure as the story in the books. They've just, you know,
brought it to today.
Yeah. They've just broadened their lens a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me immediately is like Christy is very much in the book supposed to be, I guess, what we would have called like a tomboy. As evidence, like the background for that is she grows up with three brothers and her parents are divorced. And it's supposed to be like she's just one of the guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's very much like her character. And it's kind of like one-dimensional in that way. And I never really like identified as strongly with Christy as a character because I didn't really see myself that way. Like, I wasn't, you know, into sports as much. I played them, but I wasn't like that, you know. But it's funny because in this reincarnation, she's a feminist.
She is.
She's a very strong, defiant feminist voice that I really identify with now and appreciate, and I don't know that I ever recognized that in the book series.
Yeah.
That's funny, because I was watching this, and I'm like, oh, Christy must be the one that Sydney likes, that Sydney relates to.
Yeah.
I would have. If I had felt that from that character, and maybe it was there and I just didn't see it in mm-hmm. the text. Maybe it wasn't as clear, but like seeing that character now, I identify very strongly with Christy mm-hmm. in a way that I didn't when it was just like, oh, that's the one that's into sports, which was right. very much like the cliche back then. Like, oh, there's the one girl who's into sports and doesn't wear dresses.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing.
It is also worth mentioning that her mom is played by Cher from Clueless.
Yes.
Alicia Silverstone.
Mm-hmm. And they make a joke in the first episode where she's talking to her daughter, Christy, and Christy says, I guess my mom isn't totally clueless about high school or middle school or whatever.
Wink, wink.
It's very good. I did appreciate that. But in the first episode, Christy's whole thing is that she spoke up in class because they were talking about Thomas Jefferson writing All Men Are Created Equal, and she was saying, why isn't all people are created equal? Like, what about women? Why didn't it say all people? And she got detention and had to write an essay about decorum for speaking up during class when she wasn't supposed to and not raising her hand. And her whole thing at the end of it was that a guy wouldn't have been asked to write that essay, and for a girl, it's just supposed to be like, sit down, be quiet, and talk when you're told to. And she doesn't think that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that, because that's something I think that is true, but also I don't know has been talked about by a middle school character in a show like that.
They do a really nice job. The character of Christy really impressed me, one, because it felt so much more well-rounded than the character I remember from the books, and two, because she continues to do things that are not like actions or words of a like typical likable, quote unquote, likable girl mm-hmm. in one of these series. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there are times where she's very clearly rubbing people the wrong way and saying things that like make people uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that, because the thing is, like, Christy's the boss
mm-hmm.
and she owns that. Mm-hmm. And you don't, especially in young female characters, you don't see that very often.
And she also acknowledges that, and acknowledges that a lot of people don't like her, like the way that she does certain things or carries uh-huh. herself or whatever. But I know at one point she looks at Stacy, I guess, when Stacy joins, and just says, yeah, I'm bossy, deal with it, or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to tell you what to do, and this was my idea, and, you know, and she owns that, and she's not going to mm-hmm. shy away from yeah. that.
But I do like that they don't just, like, even just that, they don't put that on her character and just leave it there. Because there are moments with her friends where it's misplaced, her, you know, she yes. mm-hmm. she's not a very good friend because of her bossiness mm-hmm. and, like, you know, that interferes with her ability to take care of the people she cares about. And other people in her friend circle call her on that,
yeah.
like, in a supportive way, you know?
They definitely do push against each other in ways that are... again, unique to, I think, these sorts of TV series and book series and things, to try to force each other to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
I think watching Marianne was the character I always identified with, because, okay. oh, she's the shy one who likes to read.
Yeah.
that was it. In the book series, that's what, she was the shy one who...
Liked to read. Yeah.
I like to read. I used to be shy.
She is the one I found myself liking most, identifying with most, because her thing in this is that she likes musical
yeah.
theater.
Yes.
And Broadway.
and that, you know, which is great. One thing we mentioned, like, they diversified all the characters in the cover art in the original Babysitter's Club series. It looked like other from the original members. Now mm-hmm. more members get added over time, but from the original members of the Babysitter's Club, Claudia is the only one who is not white.
Mm-hmm.
Claudia is Japanese in the series, but everybody else is a white person.
Mm-hmm.
And they have changed that for the TV series, which I think is great, because there is nothing, like, it is not inherent to the storylines that the characters be white.
Yeah.
So there is no reason that we wouldn't have more diversity, and certainly it's more representative of, like, mm-hmm. the actual world we live in, that they're more diverse. And I think that's great with Marianne and with Dawn's character, who's supposed to be like this typical California girl
mm-hmm.
and who is a woman of color as well. And so I think that that's been a great, you know.
I did enjoy when Dawn first meets Marianne and pulls out her lunch at the lunch table, and she has like a green juice and like a salad, and it's all in like the wooden reusable bamboo mm-hmm. stuff. And she says, yeah, it's true. I'm from California. We do eat different there. It's like, okay, that's really good.
I was going to say, it's not even like a read or a caricature. I'm just like, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
No, and I thought that was really neat. Like, they took that kind of view of the character, and then they took it to, like, the logical, like, so they're very much into spirituality. Dawn is a very empathetic, sensitive, caring character who, like, mm-hmm. spends a lot of time when people say things that are mean or rude trying to think about why and, like, connect with them on their level. Like, mm-hmm. the pain she takes to connect with Christy, I thought was so impressive and so admirable to put that on in a young character so that kids could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this person coming from that they're treating me this way?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was such an admirable quality. And then they have, like, the theme of, like, paganism in Dawn's family, her mom's, her aunt?
Her aunt.
Her aunt, who holds, like, the circle. Mm-hmm. I forget what they call it, but they're celebrating, is it like the
moon in Scorpio? Is that what it
yes,
is?
Yes, something the like
new,
that. Yeah.
The full moon, new moon? One of the two? I forget.
The new moon.
New moon.
Yeah. And it was none of that is, of course, in the original series.
Yeah.
But it made a lot of sense in the context of Dawn, the character.
I liked, on the subject of paganism, there's a wedding that is officiated by this old lady that was previously called, like, she was a scary witch that lived next door to one of the kids they were babysitting, and the kids were all afraid of her. So then she shows up, and she's the officiator of the wedding. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you're afraid because you think I'm a witch. And I am. She's just kind of like, yeah, that's right. That's what I practice. I am a practicing witch. It's no big deal. So.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, I like that, too. There's so many. They have taken every opportunity to address those things. You know, it's funny. Last week we talked about Glee, and we talked about how, like, they were not afraid to address things, although sometimes they did them very poorly.
The wrong way, yeah.
I feel like in the Babysitter's Club, when they address those things, they did it very thoughtfully, intentionally, with great care.
Right.
Which is so important if you're going to aim it at a younger audience.
Well, and I think that it's kind of... at some point, it's like you can tell a... You could tell a trans narrative without having rampant transphobia in it. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, in the past, mm-hmm. that's always the thing. Like, well, if we have a gay character, we have to have a bunch of gay bashing to show how they, you know, came about. And if you're going to have a trans character, you have to start with some transphobia. It's like, no, hopefully in the future we don't. We just have characters that are introduced as whatever. And, like, that's just, their role is not mm-hmm. based in their pain. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like it that it kind of shows a world. Because there are gay characters. They're like, Dawn that has two dads, mm-hmm. yeah, and then there's a lesbian couple that appear in the movie or in the show, and they're not treated mm-hmm. as anything other than just like, oh yeah, that's a couple, like,
yeah. Yeah, they're just there, yeah. I want to talk more. That was one of the you alluded to, one of the storylines that really I felt they did very well,
right?
But before we do that,
let's check the group message.
First of all, this week I may have mentioned to you two previously that I am now an artist.
Yes.
You took my
I'm
spot.
I'm sorry, Taylor.
I'll have to find something else.
You're not the only artist in the family anymore, thanks to Wild Gears. I mentioned this before. It's like the Spirograph you used to use when you were a kid, except better. Just like we're talking about with the Babysitter's Club, it's the better version. It's the version for now. It's the 2020 version. They're laser-cut gears. They're precise. They're beautiful. They're very easy to use. It's the same idea, just like a Spirograph. It's very satisfying to see the kind of art you can create. They've got all different sizes and shapes, and it's really cool. I had a lot of fun doing it, which, as I've said before, is not something I associate with creating art. Having fun. Because I'm usually very bad at it.
I get it.
So it made me feel good, which was a new feeling for me when trying to create visual art.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fun thing that I could do with my kids. So it's great whether it's something you want to do on your own just to make art for yourself, or if you do have kids and you want to, you know, experiment with this as a new fun way to make things.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. Wild Gears are designed to be relaxing and satisfying to use. And right now we need things to relax, you know, de-stress, express ourselves, and Wild Gears has you covered.
Mm-hmm.
So, Taylor, if our listeners want to check out Wild Gears, what should they do?
Well, you can discover Wild Gears and get a 20% discount. You just need to go to wildgears.com/stillbuff. That's wildgears.com/stillbuff. Get that 20% discount and discover Wild Gears, which are making art fun, relaxing, and easy.
I want to tell you guys about my pits.
Oh. All right.
Okay.
I want to tell you about what I put on them, and that's native deodorant to make them smell good.
Well, that's a good job, Riley.
And I use native deodorant because it's designed to block odor better with ingredients you've heard of like coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. And it's also vegan and never tested on animals, which I have started looking for more in my products that I use, especially a lot of skincare products don't publicize the fact that they still do test on animals, but a lot of them do, but native never does, which is important to me, and I'm sure to you as well. They also have over 10 scents, including rotating seasonals. Their most popular classic scents are coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and citrus and herbal. Personally, I use the coconut vanilla. Makes me feel very beachy.
I love anything coconut. I'm always... Yeah. I know that's not original to say over and over again, but it's my favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite too. Yeah. And it makes me smell like the good parts of like the scented sunscreen, except better. It's also risk-free to try because every product comes with free shipping within the U.S. and free 30-day returns and exchanges. So you get it, you don't like it for some reason, you got 30 days to send it back for free, return and exchange it, which is awesome. So, Tay, if our listeners want to check out Native Deodorant, what should they do?
Well, you can make the switch to Native today by going to nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout for 20% off your first order.
One more time. Well, not one more time, because I'll mention the website one more time at the end. So almost the penultimate time, I'll mention it. It is the Max Fun Drive. I always feel lucky that we can do this show every week, that we can make this together and talk to each other, and that some of you all out there seem to enjoy hanging out with us for a little bit. It makes me happy. I hope it brings you joy. And being a member of the Max Fun Network helps allow us the time, the technology, the income to keep this going, to keep creating this. And we're really grateful for that. If you are a member, if you are joining, if you're upgrading, we thank you so much for doing that. You can start at $5 a month. That gets you over 200 hours of bonus content. Riley wrote an original D&D campaign for us to play with our mom.
It is out currently when you're listening to this.
Yes.
It'll be on that bonus stream feed.
So check that out. You at $10 a month, as we've mentioned before, you can pick one of our cool enamel pins designed by Megan Lincott. You get a membership card. There's a $20 a month level with a special game pack with like custom dice set and a deck of playing cards. There are other levels you can join. MaximumFun.org/join. And you can get a subscription for a friend for 1 year.
What?
Yes. So you can both enjoy. You can talk about the bonus content together and all the gifts and things. You can gift a subscription to someone you've never even met who had to cancel this year due to COVID. You'll be paying forward all of this extra fun, these gifts, some joy. You just check the anonymous Max Funster box when you're filling out your online form at MaximumFun.org/join, and you can do that too. If you're in a position to do that, that's a really nice gift to give somebody.
It is.
Yeah. And it's nice for a friend who you wanna, who maybe isn't in a position to be a member right now, but like would like to, and then you all can share that new experience. Sharing new experiences is really important during this time of quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you can. Thank you again. If you're a member, thank you.
Yes.
If you have been donating to help us keep going, thank you. If you're joining, thank you. If you share our show, if you tell somebody about our show, we just can't say thank you enough. It really means the world to us and it helps us keep doing this. And, you can go to MaximumFun.org/join if it's something you want to do. So Taylor, you alluded to the in episode 4, Marianne saves the day.
Marianne really does save the day in episode 4.
Yes. Which, so in the original book, if I remember correctly, Marianne is babysitting for a kid who gets sick. Marianne cannot, at the time, she is having like a falling out with some of the other members of the Babysitter's Club, so she doesn't feel like she can call them to ask for support. She can't get a hold of her dad. She can't get a hold of the kid's parents. And she ends up having to like get the kid to the hospital by herself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is similar to the show. It is sort of like it's a fever. There's no necessarily like medical emergency that you're really, you know, it's kind of nebulous.
Yeah.
You know, but the idea is like Marianne is able to do this, even though she's shy and timid and afraid. She steps up and is brave and saves the day.
Yeah.
That's the story. They're aimed at kids.
Yeah.
They have taken that same story and changed it just a little bit by making the little girl that Marianne is babysitting trans.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, at first, it struck me like, oh, that's great to introduce some diversity onto the show because they do it in such a matter-of-fact way. And it is explained through the voice of one of the other, you know, young girls, Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
It's done so well, and so just like this is just Bailey is a girl.
Mm-hmm.
This is who Bailey's always been, and everyone accepts that. And it's just so matter of fact. I felt like it was handled so well for a younger audience. Mm-hmm. I felt really good about the way it was being presented to Charlie as something that I could endorse and stand behind. As like this is a good representation of, you know, explaining this to children.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take it a step further when Bailey does get sick and has to go to the hospital, and the doctor and nurse who come in to see her immediately misgender her because they're looking at her chart
and not at her. Yeah.
Yeah. Which also highlights a real problem, which is that a lot of medical record systems were not built to reflect, you know, someone's actual gender.
Right.
Sure.
You know, gender identity. They just weren't. And so even the ones that have been retrofitted to do that, a lot of it depends on like people manually entering that information, and it's not always done. And certainly if you have paper records,
right,
nobody's doing that. And so it reflects a real problem in our medical system where people are constantly at risk of being misgendered because of that. It is a deficiency that would be super easy to correct if people took the time to do it. And it put a young girl in the position of having to stand up, you know, and say, let me stop you before you do this, because you're causing this child that I am responsible for great pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am going to take you out in the hallway and explain to you. And I was just so impressed with the whole storyline.
Yeah. The way Marianne talked to the doctor and the nurses, which, I mean, thinking about the fact that Marianne's supposed to be, what, like 12? 13.
Mm-hmm.
Is just very, it's not angry, it's just very matter of fact. Like, if you took the time to look, you realize what you're doing is wrong. You are making this child upset, and I ask that you treat them with more respect, and you treat them and call them the way they're supposed to be treated, and call Bailey by her correct pronouns and her correct name, and refer to her as she wants to be. And then also, can you find me a hospital gown that is not blue? Because Bailey sees the blue one and says she doesn't want the blue one because, you know, just stereotypically, for some reason, we associate, like, blue with boys and pink with girls. So that's probably something that Bailey has dealt with before. It made me cry just knowing that, like, not only is Marianne the character that says her greatest fear is, like, someone calling that she doesn't know and having to talk to them on the phone, which is also, like, one of my greatest fears, I get it. But she talks to these two adult strangers and educates them on something and knows better than them about this and is a good advocate for a little person.
But I think just having a trans character presented that is taken care of, that is respected, that is, you know, valued by her parents, by the people that interact with her. I just think that, you know, we don't really think about how powerful something that simple can be, where you just see this character that has a very positive, loving upbringing, and that's just matter of fact presented. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's another good point. They highlight the fact that Bailey's parents have made the effort to, you know, respect Bailey's gender identity and buy her clothes. What?
Sydney's crying a little bit.
Shut up. No, it's really sweet. I mean, she's got this beautiful, like, princessy room, and, you know, they show all of her clothes, and the way they describe it is just so simple. Like, these are the clothes that help Bailey feel more like herself, and it's just, they're feminine clothes, and it's just that. It's that simple.
Yeah. Even the way that they first show the audience that, and Marianne, that Bailey is a trans girl, is that Marianne goes back to put Bailey in a different dress and opens up her closet and sees that it's full of, like, boy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not boy clothes, just very opposite of what Bailey wears, which is, like, the pink, sparkly princess stuff. Typically male clothes. And Marianne doesn't really question or say anything. She just says, well, that won't do. We can't wear those. We need to find your clothes, your princess clothes, because that's what you like. Yeah. And that's it. Like, it's not like, oh, well, what does this mean? Child, tell me why you have all these boy clothes. Tell me about yourself and your identity. It's just, okay, let's find your other clothes.
And obviously not to insinuate it, that gender-coded clothes are integral to somebody's identity. Sure. But I think in the narrative language that we have for TV, they tell the story really beautifully and really concisely.
Especially through the eyes of a 13-year-old.
I think they're taking advantage of those sort of stereotypes for little kids.
Exactly.
You know, because Charlie got that instantly. Instantly, she understood what they were communicating through that. Even though I took great pains to buy her gender-neutral clothing when she was younger.
You have a child that loves pink and princess dresses and sparkles more than anyone I know.
I know. She rejected all of it and wanted pink. So, but I tried. But yes, I thought that was well done. And I thought Dawn's explanation, which is simply, you're right-handed, how would you feel if somebody tried to force you to be left-handed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how Bailey would feel if you tried to force her to be a boy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, it was that simple. And I think they've done that because they do that with that very obviously new storyline from the books. You know, that was not, it's been a while, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
the books were great. I'm pretty sure they didn't cover that. But they do that with that. They do that with storylines they've covered before, like Stacy has type 1 diabetes, and that made her kind of an outcast at her previous school because what I think they're trying to say is that she had a seizure during school. And again, this is something that wouldn't have been in the books because it didn't exist then. One of her supposed friends videoed her and put it on YouTube, which I guess could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately today. And it embarrassed her. And then there's this question of, can she take care of our kids if this could sometimes happen and we wouldn't be there? And they confront it head on, and Stacy stands up for herself and her parents stand up with her, and they have like a pediatric endocrinologist stand up and talk, and like, this is why this is okay, and Stacy can be a babysitter, and there's no reason that this pump that she wears is a problem, and she becomes proud of it and like gets a sparkly one.
Sydney's crying a little bit again. No, but I do
it's
like
just
that
so
moment
positive
where you see Stacy trying on clothes and going to great lengths to hide her pump and wear clothes that are either baggy enough where you can't see it, or wear a jacket so you can't, and then at the end of the episode she like bedazzles it and it's blue and sparkly, and she wears it clipped to the front of her band so you can see right there instead of hiding it. And then even the moment where her dad's like, I want you to do that to my phone so I can wear that in the front of my pants too. It was like,
that's a very
dad moment, but it was also very sweet.
Well, and I like that, you know, you have that episode that establishes that in her as part of her character, but then the show just sort of moves on from there. You know, it's like after that, it's like, that's okay. We've established that part of her character, but there's more to her, mainly that she's really boy crazy. That seems to be her thing, but still like if that's a normal teen thing. It's like, she's got regular narratives. It's not like she's the sick kid for the whole story. You know, that's just part of
her. Yeah. And I think that was actually part of the books too, if I remember correctly, that like we introduced this idea about Stacy, and from time to time it comes up. There were always moments where like Claudia was big on hiding candy in her room. So there was always the like Claudia would pull out candy and then something for Stacy that would be sugar free. Like there was always like those kinds of things continue, mm-hmm. or like that consideration, like when Christy gets pizza for everybody but gets a salad for Stacy, mm-hmm. those kinds of ideas continued throughout it. But it was not because like Stacy's sick. It right. was, oh, well, we got to look out for Stacy too.
Yeah.
Those ideas continue. And that doesn't even begin to touch like they cover loss and grief in the show. Like they talk about, you know, Marianne's mother died when she was younger. Mm-hmm. They kind of cover that through her dad, like having trouble, like letting go of like her room mm-hmm. being redecorated and some stuff connected to her mom. They talk about Christy's pain at like her father leaving them and basically having no communication with them and seeing the difference in like Dawn, whose parents have had like a healthy divorce.
Yeah.
Where like her dad's in a loving relationship with another guy now and she's on good terms with them and like she talks to them regularly and mm-hmm. she and her mom have a good relationship. Like they contrast that kind of thing. Yeah. I think all of that is very deftly handled.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those were all themes in the original book, but I don't think it was explored. It was more like sure. just that's the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As opposed to like, let's talk right. about it.
Yeah.
Let's put it out front and talk about the way that this is impacting the girls.
I thought it was specifically touching the story related to Claudia with her grandmother, her Mimi, which
yes
made me very sad because we called Riley, you call our mama,
yeah,
our Mimi.
Mimi.
Charlie immediately identified with that because she said, "I have a Mimi, and my Mimi and I have tea too."
Well, it's really, you know,
that was a moment.
Yeah. Well, and they have a very important relationship, Claudia and her Mimi, and then her Mimi suffers a stroke. And so it has to mm-hmm. relearn how to communicate, which, you know, to deftly handle that and just present it, like, once, like you said, just matter-of-factly, I think it's something that young kids will deal with. You know, they'll deal with their older relatives. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just it's not like a hush-hush thing we need to hide from kids. It's just part of a teen's narrative, you know? And then there's the whole other backstory mm-hmm. where Mimi spent time in an internment camp, in a Japanese internment camp, mm-hmm. which just to cover that in what seems like a very, you know, it's just kind of a light, fluffy series, I thought was really important and good, and becomes the thing where Claudia is an artist and is trying to look for what she's trying to say, which is a lot to put on like a 12-year-old, I'll say that, as like a young artist, but
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's where she starts to kind of look into her past and draw that forward in her art, and I thought that was really beautiful.
I thought it was too. I thought it was really beautiful to see her like drawing on her own history and her own culture and like where her, you know, grandparents and parents came from, like to see that kind of
mm-hmm.
slowly realized through a preteen lens, because it wouldn't be something that you could verbalize instantly,
right?
But an artist could represent it visually a lot faster, you know. Yeah. in that and so they use that medium with Claudia to show that. I think it is so well done. And Claudia, can we just talk about, I know this is not as deep, but her style?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was waiting for a break in an opening to just say, not even just Claudia, just all of them are so fashionable all the time that I'm watching as an almost 20-year-old adult. Like, I want to dress like these 12 and 13-year-old girls.
Mm-hmm.
They're so fashionable, especially Claudia.
Yeah. That's definitely the one. I don't know if I would say I relate the most to Claudia. That's who I would want to be the most.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Claudia when I read the books. I knew I wasn't, but I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Because the outfits, it's funny. I don't remember exactly what they looked like, but I know that what she wears is a really good representation. Like, it feels right.
Yeah.
A lot of her jewelry, I remember, was, like, handmade and, like, really, like, kind of like big like fruit shaped earrings and mm-hmm. things like that, and that those were always, I remember reading these descriptions of Claudia's outfits in the book and just being like, wow,
yeah,
I would never have the guts to dress that creatively mm-hmm. and colorfully, and I just knew that wasn't me. I always thought I was a Marianne, but I was probably more of a Christy in my mm-hmm. than the clothes I wore, in all honesty. But man, Claudia's outfits and just her whole thing, she is very cool. That is who Charlie wants to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's also just an extremely talented artist. Like, yes. They show her painting her Mimi, and it's like, it's beautiful portrait. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fascinating and baffling. She's so talented.
Well, and I thought it was a really powerful moment when she's struggling in her math class, and her parents kind of put on her, well, if you don't ace this math test, you don't get to go to a dance. She originally tries to lie and, you know, fabricate a fake test result, but then she comes forward about it. But she says, like, I'd rather focus on the things I'm good at and, like, have those things. Like, that's what I can offer, which is, I think in, like, you know, high school and middle school drama, it's so normal. Like, well, if you're bad at, like, that narrative of, like, oh, now I'm an ace in my studies because I tried really hard and everybody can get there is so normal.
Yeah.
But to see a character like, she did improve her grade. She tried, but that's not what she's good at, and she has talents, and not everybody has to be good at the traditional things that we think we're supposed to be good at in school. You know, it puts you in this little box, but Claudia is this amazing, talented artist, and maybe she's never gonna be an A student in math, and that's fine.
Yeah. I think that's a really good message. I think they do well with that. I like watching her and her sister Janine interact.
Yeah. Janine's great.
I felt bad for how, I won't say much because it wasn't entirely, but with some of the things Janine said and just like the way she like talked to like the younger girls, I was like, oh, that's what I am now, isn't it? I'm that. I'm not young and full of wonder and excitement about the world anymore. I'm Janine, who just talks about the articles she's read about child care and sits very blankly at the dinner table.
But you know, it's funny. Justin watched just a little bit of it with me, and whatever episode we were watching, Janine was on, and he like 3 seconds in went, "Well, that's my favorite character." But I don't know what they're. I feel like with Janine, they're representing though again, like she almost strikes me, and this is just my interpretation. This is not something that's in there, as someone who is supposed to be neurodiverse.
Mm-hmm. She's different. That feeling too.
Yeah. She's different from Claudia, and they're not trying to fix either of them. They're just different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does make it difficult for them to communicate and like understand each other, but it shows how they're learning to understand and communicate in ways that both of them, I mean, like I feel like you're watching them build that bridge and that connection without making either one change into whatever is quote unquote normal or right. You know what I mean? I don't know. And this might just be me putting that on the character, but I interpreted it that way. And I really appreciated it because like Janine doesn't need to be more like Claudia any more than Claudia needs to be more like Janine. They're both great and fine.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to communicate through their differences is important. And they show that. I don't know. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. I did as well.
I agree.
Have we covered everything?
Fair. I think all the important stuff.
That was all the important stuff.
So.
Well, we didn't get to the protest to overturn the summer camp that it ends with.
Oh, yeah. There's a sit-in.
Oh.
Or a lay-in, a lie-in. There's a huge...
a lot of drama.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama. There's a protest. There's... it's great. You'll have to see.
I haven't finished the whole first season, admittedly, but
well, I think I will
soon.
To show, protesting, and then there's a great moment where it's Dawn and Marianne are kind of not facing off, but Dawn is like, no, I think like action is necessary to protest, and Marianne's like, I think we can protest with our art, and that's what we're going to do, and they're both like, we can both do our own way of protesting is fine. Yeah. And it's very like, I was like, all right, yes, as long as we're rebelling against the system, here teens watching this show, here are varied ways you can rebel against the system.
It is that, and it's awesome that they represent that, and they're just so clear and concise about it, and that is what they're saying. Like, you could have different ways of protesting. The important thing is that when you see injustice, you do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can't do nothing, but you can do different things, because not everybody's going to feel comfortable doing what Dawn does, which is lead a big protest. Marianne is supposed to be the more shy one, but she feels in command when she is doing art and theater, so she does that. Plus, then Logan finally shows up, really.
Spoilers. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, there are books titled Marianne Likes Logan and Logan Likes Marianne.
They have that little moment in, like, the very first episode. He's reading a book to little kids, and she sees him, and he's like, oh, no. It's very cute.
I was so invested in the Marianne Logan romance in those books when I was younger.
I believe
so
it.
Deeply invested.
Did you finally find your Logan, Sid?
I don't know that I want to put that on Justin. That doesn't seem fair. You know who I found? I found my Ned Nickerson. I was always more of a Nancy Drew, Ned Nickerson romance, really, at the end of the day. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, Sid, thank you for showing us the Babysitter's Club. I don't think I would have watched it if you hadn't, but I'm glad I did.
As am I.
Well, good. Well, good. I would highly recommend that. I think any age could enjoy it. I understand it's aimed at younger kids, but I would really, if there are any parents out there, I feel so good about showing this to my kids. Well, to Charlie. I mean, Cooper wasn't really following. She's kind of young for it.
Yeah.
But like, I felt so good. And it's so often that we'll be watching something and I'm like, I don't want you to get that message. I don't want you to, or let me stop what we just watched and talk about it, because this is not the way I would want this represented. And I watched the entire series with Charlie and never felt the need to stop and like go against it. If anything, it struck up good conversations where we could explore those ideas more because of the jumping off point that the show started. I just think it's a really positive thing.
I will say, when Cooper is old enough to enjoy it, it would be good for her to watch, because she's also represented in it very well. Because there's a little girl that they babysit named Karen, who is terrifying.
Yes.
She's really creepy and weird, but like in a cool way. And I was like, oh, it's Cooper.
And wanted to have wakes for her, like, old porcelain haunted dolls.
Yeah. Yep. That is definitely Cooper.
That's Cooper.
Yeah. Actually, I think Charlie said that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
There's Cooper.
Well, good. Well, what's up next?
I want to talk about one of my favorite movies from youth. I definitely watched it in my teens, in college. I've watched it as an adult. It makes me cry every time. I want to talk about The Brave Little Toaster.
Yay.
All right.
Which I'm excited. Have actually never seen before. So.
It's a very, very important piece of animation to me.
I loved that. It's been a long time. I'm excited to. It's another one I can share with the kids.
So. Yeah, it gets a little creepy, but I think it's kid-friendly.
That sounds good. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll watch that for next time. And thank you both for indulging me for the Babysitter's Club. I still have those books, you know, Tay, if you want to take this opportunity.
Do you want to read them?
I watched the show, so I don't think I need to read the books.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'll save them for Charlie.
All right.
Thank you, listeners. One last time, we want to mention this is the end of the Maximum Fun Drive. This is the last time I'll say this, but... thank you. If you are a member, if you have taken this time to join, thank you. If you have gotten a membership for a friend, thank you. That's what a kind thing to do. What a friendly thing to do. Thank you. And remember, this is the time, if you were ever thinking of becoming a member, of chipping in a few bucks each month to help us keep doing the things we do. We are a listener-supported network. This is the time to do it, because you get presents. And who doesn't like presents?
Everybody likes presents.
Yes. So if you go to MaximumFun.org/join, you can join at whatever monthly donation level you are comfortable, whatever you can do. And you can get at $5 a month, you get a ton of bonus content, hours and hours and hours of fun, funny entertainment exclusively for members. $10, you can get the pin, whatever one you choose. Ours is very cool, but there are lots to choose from. So pick your favorite pin. Again, at the $20 a month level, you get the fun game pack. And then there are other levels beyond that. But anything you can do really helps us. And again, thank you if you're a member. Thank you for supporting us. Please share our show or share a link or tell a friend if you can. That helps us out, too.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org/join. Thank you both. Thank you. Listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of our new members. And you can tweet at us at StillBuff. You can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby Change Mine.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McRoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am still buffering.
And I am too. As we go
on. Oh, no, go ahead. I'm going to leave you hanging on this one.
Get it? Because it's the end of the Max Von Trier.
Have a lot of problems.
How do you juggle your holds at the library?
Well, how do you decide what to read next?
What do you do when you find out an author you love is a huge trash baby?
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
And we're the hosts of Reading Glasses.
We're here to solve all your reader problems and along the way, help you figure out
your reader wheelhouse,
which are the things that will absolutely make you pick up a book. Our listener favorites tend to be magic and a woman on a journey.
And also birds for some reason.
Your reader doghouse.
Yeah, that's the things that'll make you avoid a book.
Ugh, love triangles stress me out so much. Reading Glasses.
Every Thursday on MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.